Welcome to Future of Journalism, a podcast from the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism at the University of Oxford. I'm Mitali Mukherjee, Director of the Reuters Institute. In this episode, we're discussing one of the hottest topics in journalism right now, which is how people or newsrooms are responding to AI, and more importantly, how people are responding to the growing role of AI in news. We'll look at how generative AI tools are being used, how people engage with AI-generated answers in online searches, and AI's role in newsrooms and the wider society, of course. I'm joined by our postdoctoral research fellow and AI specialist, Felix Simon, who was lead author on a report on how people are thinking about all these questions. This report surveys people in six countries, and it's quite a wide geographical span: Argentina, Denmark, France, Japan, the UK, and USA, and is a follow-up report to one we published last year. Felix, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Vitaly. I look forward to this.
So let's do a context-setting question first, as we always do, Felix. Before we look more closely at AI and news as a subset, give us a bit of a bigger picture feel on how generative AI, or Gen AI, as I'm going to say through this conversation, is used more broadly and how it compares with the previous survey from last year. How often are these tools used? Is there a popularity rating here? Who's using it?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic question. It's always good to contextualize these things. In many ways, I think the vibe for a lot of people there was that AI use was already up. I think that's the sense lots of people had. If you're reading the news, that's the impression you easily get. And this is something we can also confirm with our findings across those countries. Almost everyone has heard at least of one AI system by now. That's one of the most striking findings. It's really hard to find those people who don't know what AI is and what these systems are. And the uptake also jumped year on year in comparison to 2024. So for people who say that they've ever used any AI system that we asked about, that rose from 40% to 61%. And the weaker use of any of those tools rose from 18% of people saying that they had them, or that they are using them on a weekly basis, to 34% this year, which is a quite dramatic increase, a sort of a doubling. In many ways, when it comes to the tools that are most popular with people, ChatGPT is probably unsurprisingly in the lead. It's interesting to sort of speculate why that might be the case. In many ways, it's because it's the earliest one that was sort of made publicly available. And it also leads in our survey with 22% weekly use across countries, and then followed by systems like Gemini from Google, Meta's suite of AI systems, and Microsoft's Copilot. But basically, the core user base for these big sort of platform systems has again doubled year on year, which is quite striking. When we look at who's using it, again, there's an interesting picture. Probably unsurprisingly, the user sort of skews slightly younger. So 59% of the 18 to 24 year olds used any Gen AI tool or system in the last week, versus just 20% of the 55 year olds and older. It's something we see quite commonly with new technologies, that younger people are sort of the first adopters, the early adopters, and that also seems to play out for generative AI. But if you sort of drill down into the data, but this age gap is driven mainly by ChatGPT, where we have so 47% in the youngest cohort using this versus just 9% for the oldest. One thing that I always say when I talk about this data is it's important to remember that despite these impressive numbers, there's still lots of people who haven't heard or basically haven't used any AI system. So many are only light or occasional users, and even for the top tools, large shares only sort of use them monthly or once or twice. So despite the sort of doubling that we've seen with weekly use, there's still a large part of the population, all those countries, who only sort of use them occasionally. That might change in the future, but at least that's the situation as it presents it to us for now.
Very interesting. As I said at the start as well, Felix, it's quite a wide variance geographically in terms of countries. Did you see a difference in terms of the usage country-wise? Because there are sort of cultural differences sometimes on how people approach technology or how willing they are to embrace it.
Yeah, I think that's correct. That's a great question to ask. in many ways, what we sort of see is sort of happening across countries, but there are sort of some outliers. We're not quite sure if that's just cultural reasons. Could also be the sort of demographic profiles, with some societies having just a larger number of younger people, and therefore you sort of see a different picture. But at least for weekly use, for instance, Argentina is the highest, where 51% of people say they sort of used it weekly, followed by the USA with 36%, and then other countries like Denmark, the UK, sort of following, and with the lowest numbers in France and Japan, where it was 27% and 26% respectively in terms of weekly use of any Gen AI system. ChatGPT is sort of the one that happens across countries. There's not a big difference there. It's the top tool. The runners-up sort of vary a bit, but they are all part of the sort of big platform companies. So it is in some cases Gemini first, in some cases it's one of the Meta AI systems, and that sort of ranking sort of differs by country, but broadly it's those four. And yeah, it's in many ways a sort of only small difference, I would say, by country, at least for weekly use. It's not as striking as you probably would expect it to be.
Are there clear verticals emerging though, Felix, in terms of what purposes people use these Gen AI tools for? And that's aside from using it to solve a math problem or to check on whether you have the right recipe.
Not bad uses either. No, I think you're completely right. We did see that. It's something we asked about both last year and this year. And what we've seen is that information seeking, sort of information retrieval tasks, in many ways, that is now the top use case. That wasn't the case last year. But this year we found that 24% across countries say they use it weekly for that purpose, up from 11% in 2024. And it has thereby overtaken forms of media creation. So say creating a poem or creating an email, which sort of is a 20% and 21% now. The other thing we saw, and we unfortunately didn't ask about this last year, but we did this time, was that people also use it for social interaction. So 7% of people this year said that they use AI systems for some form of social interaction, as a friend, as an advisor. Although it looks like exactly is a bit hard to say with our data, and follow-up research will hopefully sort of dive deeper into what that means or what it means to people. But at least when you sort of ask people about it, that's what's emerging. And it's also higher for younger cohorts again, where 13% of the 18 to 24 year olds say that they've used an AI system in some shape or form to sort of interact with it in a social way. If you look more closely at these information retrieval tasks that I talked about, we did see, for instance, that researching a topic is now at 15%, people asking it for sort of specific advice at 11%, or answering factual questions, that's at 11% weekly again. So people really seem to be embracing those systems as a way to make sense of the world and make sense of things they're interested in. Creation tasks, again, they sort of remain mostly niche. 9% of people in our survey across countries said that they have used it for image generation. I personally was a bit surprised by that, because I would have expected this to be a lot higher, because we've seen quite a lot of development and progress when it comes to the image generation abilities of those systems. And if you look at the recent news about OpenAI's Sora system, for instance, or Google's Nano Banana, which are really, really quite good at sort of creating realistic imagery in a variety of formats. I would have personally expected that more people make use of this, but basically we haven't seen those sorts of big increases. So it kind of seems to suggest that the early adopters have done their work there, and this sort of need has been saturated for now. And when it comes to news, obviously something we're quite interested in at the Reuters Institute, that is small. Even though it's rising. So this year we see that 6% of people say that they weekly use any Gen AI system for news consumption or for news purposes in any shape or form, which is up from 3% last year. It's strongest in Argentina and the US, so there we do see these sort of country differences play out. But again, it's a very sort of small number in comparison to some of the other tasks people are using it. And if you then sort of go further and look at, okay, what are these people who use it specifically for news purposes? What are they actually using it for? What do they do? We do find that latest news, asking for the latest news, is sort of strongest use case there. But also things like summarizing, evaluating, rewriting sort of news content seems to be quite pronounced. And again, there's also sort of a clear age pattern. among those who have used an AI system for getting news, younger people are sort of more likely to ask those systems to help them make stories easier to understand. 48% versus 27% for the oldest cohort. But it's very important to remember again that these are very, very small segments of the overall population. And most people that we did survey didn't use it directly for news. They used it for other purposes, mostly around information seeking.
But just on that point about young audiences, I think it's important to point out that it ties in with a lot of our other research, which when, you know, younger audiences are asked why it is that they don't turn to the news, sense making is something that they point to as a challenge. So it sort of ties in that many of them are using Gen AI for that sense making ability of news. And we'll scratch this in more detail, exactly, of course. But let's talk a bit about the AI search, findings, Felix, which is quite common now in many people's online experiences with the rollout of these AI-generated searches. What's the level of exposure? Does it vary across countries? And maybe it would be useful for people listening to actually have a placeholder on top of this question, which is, what is it that they're talking about when we talk about AI search?
Yeah. It's really important to sort of broaden it out, as you say. In many ways, what we mean when we talk about this is things like getting an AI-generated answer in response to a search question. So if many people will have had this experience, at least according to our data, that they ask for something, they have a question, they go to Google, they go to Microsoft's Bing's. So if that's the two dominant search engines, they type in their question. And then instead of a list of links, a list of sources that they would follow, they would get basically a sort of short generated answer in a box, often with sort of a list of sources that they can then consult if they want to. So basically, if we ask about seeing this, that's what we refer to. It's also important, before I sort of go into the results, to say that this is where sort of survey research becomes a bit tricky at times, because of course people are not always perfect in exactly recalling if they've seen something, and the sort of stated behavior often can sort of differ to a degree from actually observed behaviors, if you actually to sit down with them and see what they actually do, what they have seen. But nevertheless, it sort of gives you a fairly accurate and reasonably good sort of idea of how common this is. And this is where we did find that across countries, 54% say that they saw an AI-generated search answer in the last week in response to one of their queries. And much to the point you made, this has been now broadly rolled out across countries. It's probably not very surprising that this is the case. And our data sort of quite clearly shows this. It's again interesting to see how that breaks down by country. Argentina really is a sort of standout category here, where 70% people say that they've seen one. The UK is at 64%, the USA at 61%, and then followed by Denmark 54%, Japan with 46%, and France with just 29%. Even though it sort of might feel very low, but we looked into this in France. The reason is that at the time of the research, Google is the sort of dominant search engine, which I think has roughly sort of 85% market share for search in France, hadn't yet rolled out AI overviews or AI summaries. So people couldn't see those within the sort of dominant search engine in France. And that explains this sort of somewhat lower number.
Let's dig a bit deeper with that one. How do people engage with these answers in terms of actually clicking through to the site, the sources that they cite, as you said, that come up in that box with an AI-generated answer? And any findings or learnings in terms of trust with these AI overviews?
Yeah, we did ask about both. And in many ways, that's sort of where the picture probably, especially to publishers, is sort of a bit worrying, because our data seems to confirm some of the recent industry reports we've heard about click-through, also of people reaching publishers' sites, but also the sites of any sort of content creator on the internet declining. We found that of those who see those answers, of those who said they have seen one, at just 33%, they always or often also click through to the sources that are being displayed, and 28% that they rarely or never do this. Although younger users seem to be slightly more happy to click through. So in many ways, what we find here, and again, the sort of what people say might differ from what they actually do, is that these answers are sort of good enough in many ways. People are happy with what they see and don't necessarily feel the need to actually click through to some of the underlying sources from which these answers are being generated. In terms of trust in those, as again, it's a finding that I personally find highly fascinating, also because it sort of slightly goes against the grain of what some experts might expect or might have expected. We did find that 50% of those who've seen those answers say that they trust these answers, sort of broadly speaking, slightly higher in Japan and Argentina, a lot lower in the UK, and that these people who say they trust them are also more likely to click on one of those links. But I think it's important to say that this trust is conditional in many ways. It's something that's not just sort of where people don't just sort of look at it and say, oh yes, I see this, I trust this. When we ask people in sort of more open way to explain why they trusted or distrusted those answers, lots of people said that they find them useful. They think that because they draw on a lot of information that the answer they sort of get will be correct and therefore useful, but they also don't trust them for all kinds of topics. So what sort of came through in those answers was that for very high stake topics, health, for instance, or politics, trust was sort of a lot lower than for something like, say, celebrity gossip or maybe gardening advice or sort of the recipe for pizza. So in many ways, it's not that people are just dupes and see those answers and sort of think, oh yeah, that must clearly be correct. They still have heuristics by which they estimate them. And in many ways, these sort of AI answers are a bit like a first pass, and then people will sort of, at least in their own retelling, go on and contextualize this, follow up with other sources.
So both those findings imply for news more broadly, Felix?
Well, in many ways, I think there's a sort of discovery pressure. So we do see that AI answers are now widely seen, and that actually a fair number of people don't actually click through. So there is this referral risk for publishers. Though it's sort of a bit difficult to sort of say what that looks like at scale, how bad it will be for the industry in general or for different publishers. That's where a lot of follow-up work will be needed. And in many ways, at least when you talk to publishers, they say in some cases that the big impacts have not yet been seen. But that picture is various. There's other publishers who would say, if you ask them, that actually they have sort of already seen traffic and then people sort of coming to their content going down as a result of those AI overviews. So it will sort of disintermediate to a degree the relationship between audiences and publishers or content creators even further. I think it's also, that's the other thing, in many ways, it sort of pours cold water on this sort of idea that some pundits have, but also some people in publishing industry, but also in academia, that because we, as sort of people who study this, who think about this all day long and are quite concerned about the quality of information, but because we often don't find these answers great, because we see how they're flawed, because we see and know from research, from sort of talking to people, that they can have issues. It doesn't necessarily mean that users will see it that way too. And that's what the data clearly shows for us. There is trust in those answers. We might not always like this, but convenience and usefulness clearly seems to be something that is a selling point of those answers, and people seem to like them for that reason. So I think that's where we as of experts have to be a bit humble, because our view of those things might be quite different from what sort of general users think of those answers.
And I think it's also important here to sort of share with people listening that part of our approach at the Reuters Institute while studying AI has been not just to explore what the engagement for Gen AI and news is for audiences, but more broadly what this means for the public and how they're using AI in their daily lives, what it means for society at large. And that was really fascinating, Felix, because in your report, you did sort of foray into that as well. People's general perceptions about AI's prevalence across not just news, but different sectors in society, and which ones were the ones where they felt that AI could actually improve interactions.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of an area of the research and the report that we owe in particular to Rasmus Kleis Nielsen, who was sort of leading on this. And I'm very glad he did, because it really produced incredibly interesting findings. In many ways, people sort of think that AI is sort of increasingly used across sectors. So 41% said in our survey that they think that Gen AI is used always or often sort of across the various sectors we asked about. 67% say it is for search engines, 68% for social media. So that's where people really expect Gen AI to be used quite a lot. 51% say that for the news media. So again, still a fairly large number of people sort of thinking that it's being used there. And in terms of sort of what it does to the experience of this, sort of across sectors, we did find that 29% sort of expect Gen AI to make their personal interactions with those sectors better. 22% thought the opposite would be the case. In many ways, it's interesting that the sort of optimists seem to outnumber the pessimists for things like healthcare, science, also search, probably because A, there's a lot of media coverage on those topics. So we hear a lot of stories about healthcare being improved by AI advances. We hear how AI can potentially and already has sort of pushed science forward in many ways. And with search, at least, that's where people, thanks to things like AI summaries, but also sort of in general, sort of search results have seen, it does make a difference. That's probably why we sort of see slightly more optimism around this. Unfortunately, there's also pessimists, and the pessimists lead for things like the news media and the use of AI by governments and politicians and parties. Again, it's a bit difficult for us to say why that is the case, but in many ways we can sort of reason from existing research and from other work we've done at the Institute that it has to do with general attitudes towards those sectors that will also shape how people think about them in terms of AI. So if you have a negative attitude about the news media, if there's sort of low trust in them, you're more likely to also think that sort of AI use in this context will not necessarily be good for you. And the same with government and politicians and parties, where institutional trust or trust in those actors is low, it would not be surprising to sort of find that therefore people also think slightly more pessimistically or negatively about AI use by those very actors and what it means sort of for their interaction with them.
For a while, and perhaps it's changing now, a lot of the conversation within the news industry was like that as well, Felix, where it was very binary. AI was either terrible or it was great. You know, leaving the industry aside, what did we find in terms of how people are approaching this? Are they generally more optimistic or pessimistic about AI's role in their own lives? And then by extension, is it different or the same for wider society?
I think mostly we see, at least for the effect of AI on their own life, we see more optimists than pessimists. So in 4 out of 6 countries that we have in our research, there's more optimism when it comes to the effects AI will have on their own life, if you ask them about it. UK is the big exception as well, where there's sort of more pessimists, and that sort of generally shines through in the data.
I wonder why.
Who knows? When it comes to society, in many ways, there's more pessimists than optimists in 3 out of 6 countries, including the USA. And especially for the US, we've seen that sort of views have shifted towards a more negative stance since 2024. I would personally expect, and again, it's my expectations, not necessarily backed up by the research and the data at hand, is that that is probably to do with sort of a general sort of shift in politics in the US. Which probably will predispose people in certain ways. And it's also interesting to look at a very clear gender gap, which we did find in this context. So women are generally less likely to expect benefits for both their own lives and society from AI than men. Again, it would be very interesting to see why that is the case, but at least in our data, it was sort of very obvious.
At the start of this year, we always publish something called the Trends and Predictions Report, which is how news leaders are thinking about the year. And there was certainly a really clear shift and leaning towards investing more time and effort in AI features within newsrooms. And they've been rolled out over the course of the last few months or more. What did we find in our research, Felix, in terms of how frequently people say they actually have come across such features?
Yeah, that's when the sort of data gets maybe a little bit frustrating for some of the publishers who've been sort of pushing for the adoption of AI features and have rolled them out. We did actually find that most people across countries don't seem to see those features regularly. So 60% said they do not regularly encounter those audience-facing AI features on new sites and apps. In many ways, of course, this is, we ask the general population. That number would probably be higher if we just looked at, say, the subscribers of the Financial Times as a news outlet, which has rolled out quite a lot of AI features. And very visibly, if you ask just that subgroup, the sort of percentage would look quite differently, or the same with maybe a place like Rappler or Der Spiegel. But at least for the population large, most people say they don't regularly sort of see those features. If we ask those people who say they have seen them, what the most seen features are, it's topped by AI summaries with 19%, followed by news chatbots at 16%, and then things like AI audio, AI video, generally more seen in the USA, Japan, and Argentina. And again, in many ways, if you sort of look at the industry trends and what has happened, that's probably not very surprising, because AI summaries really were sort of the low-hanging fruit and something that's not necessarily easy to implement, but it's a very obvious way of using AI in a news context. And news chatbots is a similar way. Things like Ask the Post AI, which is exactly that. It's a chatbot you can ask. It's something I was sort of in the talks for a long time, especially sort of since those chatbots became more publicly available. So it's probably not surprising that we see more people say, if they've seen any of those features, then these are the sort of two most common ones.
Is there, you know, is there greater nuance in terms of how comfortable people are with AI's role in news specifically? And within that, are there certain areas that they're more comfortable with versus spaces where they're not comfortable with seeing AI as part of the process?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the key things we did find. And it was sort of Rasmus and Richard really picking up on this, that there is this sort of comfort gap. So across countries, only 12% in our survey say that they are comfortable with entirely AI-made news. 21% then if you ask them about, okay, what about if there's a human in the loop? That rises to 43% when news creation is sort of human-led with some help from AI, and it tops out at 62% for entirely human-generated news. So there seems to be this sort of clear gap between sort of completely sort of human-made news, hand-made news, whatever you want to call it, and news entirely made by AI. That gap has also widened since 2024. In many ways, it also varies a bit by country. So the gap, as we find, is largest in the UK and Denmark. It's a lot smaller in Japan and Argentina. And something that we've also found in past research, for instance, led by our wonderful colleague Amy Ross Aguedes, it sort of changes from task to task. So people are much more comfortable with back-end tasks. So things like spelling, grammar editing, and translation. And confidence is a lot lower for sort of rewriting things for different audiences, or creating realistic images or artificial presenters or authors, where in the latter case, only 26% and 19% respectively said that they are comfortable with this. I think it's also interesting to think about sort of the transparency aspect, which is quite important to a lot of news organizations, where they try and sort of make clear if they're using AI, where that is happening, because they want audiences to understand. And in many ways, that has been sort of seen as a good recipe of sort of hopefully increasing trust and helping people to understand what is happening. Unfortunately, this is again sort of an area where we do find that only 90% across country say that they see AI labels daily, despite 77% of those people also saying that they use news daily. So despite sort of very common news usage, it seems that most people actually don't see AI labels. Again, it's a bit of variation by country. But that's clearly sort of an issue for publishers, because yes, you can be transparent, you can make those efforts, but if no one sees them, what effect will that have? And at least for now, it seems that most people actually don't recall seeing those labels.
What were our findings point to in terms of how people think AI could potentially transform the news? And again, are there sort of country variations in those expectations?
Yeah, in many ways, that's again where we sort of see a continuation of what we already found last year. We could say that sort of attitudes have hardened a bit, where when we ask people sort of about the expected benefits, there still is view that news will be sort of cheaper to make with the help of AI and more up to date. But there's also strong expected downsides where people also think it will be less transparent and less trustworthy. And the sort of picture is kind of the same as last year, just sort of that the attitudes have slightly sharpened even. So people seem to have become more entrenched in their views. There's a bit of a country pattern there where Japan and Argentina show that sort of people are slightly more positive. UK, again, is sort of a country where people are sort of more negative and sort of expect the news to become slightly worse for them with respect to AI use by news organizations.
Just looking at sort of the core elements of this contract between journalism and the public, though, we've explored trust, we've explored reach on confidence, Felix. How much confidence do people have in journalists and newsrooms using AI responsibly? Because as it should, a lot of the conversation is around the ethics of this usage along with the technological developments.
That's right. And unfortunately, it seems like, again, I'm sort of the bearer of slightly bad news for news. In many ways, human checks are sort of seen as something that happens only on a very limited basis. Only 33% in our surveys across countries think that editors always or often check AI outputs. It's a lot higher in Japan, where 42% say so, and Argentina it's at 44%. But in the UK, only 25% of people think that AI-generated outputs are sort of checked by an editor before they get into production, before they sort of get to see them, which is clearly indicative of the fact that people don't seem to have a lot of trust in a lot of news organizations to use that technology in a responsible way. In many ways, if you look more closely at this sort of trust link, those who strongly trust news organizations are far likelier to believe that those checks happen, at 57%. Versus only 90% among the strong distrusters. So that's a very clear finding there, that basically existing trust in news organizations and in news also shapes the way you think about how those organizations are using AI. And in many ways, this also continues when we ask people about if they sort of expect differences between different news organizations in terms of how responsible they are in AI use, where we do see a lot of difference. So 43% say that they actually expect different outlets to do sort of differently good jobs at handling responsible AI, versus 28% who say that they think there will only be small differences. So again, people expect some outlets to be a lot better doing this in a good way and adopting and integrating AI in a responsible way. And that's not necessarily sort of pretty reading, I would say, for quite a lot of publishers out there.
But perhaps important reading for the news industry and for publishers. Felix, thanks.
Medicine serves a purpose, yes.
Thanks very much for joining us today, Felix.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Our guest today, Felix Simon, postdoctoral research fellow and lead author of our latest report, which looks at what people in 6 countries think about AI's role in journalism and society. As always, you can find the full report on our website. Thanks very much for listening to this episode of Future of Journalism. There's going to be more episodes coming soon, and you can get them wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to stay in touch with the news that we have going from the Reuters Institute, subscribe to our weekly newsletter on our homepage, or LinkedIn and Blue Sky are the other places you can find us. This is Future of Journalism, a podcast by the Reuters Institute. On behalf of the team that's put this together, thanks very much for listening. I'm Mitali Mukherjee, and we'll be back soon.